is also present. I'm going to ask our marshal to call the next case for hearing and consideration.
Calling case number A211023, Ryan Lindsay Relator versus Monticello RV Center Incorporated Respondent and Department of Employment and Economic Development Respondent.
And as I've been saying all morning, thank you, Council, for adjusting your schedules. We've had some matters that were unexpected, so we've all been trying to work this as best we can. Before you begin your presentation of your case, please remember to state your name and indicate which party you're speaking on behalf of. Each of you will have 15 minutes with an additional 5 minutes being reserved to relator for rebuttal if you choose to use that. And Mr. Earhart, if I'm pronouncing that right, when you're ready to proceed, you have the floor.
Thank you, Judge. It's John Huberty. I'm filling in for Mr. Earhart.
Thank you.
I'm the original attorney on the brief. And I'll go ahead and get started. Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court. My name is John Huberty, and I'm here this morning arguing on behalf of Relator Ryan Lindsay. This case is about a commissioned salesperson who worked for several years for Monticello RV, a sales company that sold RVs or does sell RVs up in Monticello on a commission basis. And throughout that time, he had repeated difficulties with the ability to track his earnings, ultimately leading him to become suspicious that he was not being paid everything he was owed, which in fact turned out to be the case after an audit was done by the employer. And ultimately, the fact that he was suspicious, wasn't being paid on the regular payday that was set by the employer, which was the 10th of every month, for commission payments, and wasn't being paid what he was owed or even on the agreed upon date that they adjusted after it was found out that he was owed much more than anyone knew. And so ultimately this led him to quit. They were reasons caused by the employer. They were good and substantial reasons that any objective employee would find a good cause to quit. And so ultimately he did quit. As far as the law that applies to this, it's Minnesota Statutes 268.105 subdivision 7D, as I'm sure this court knows, allows the court to either affirm or remand, or the court may reverse or modify the decision of the ULJ if the substantial rights of the petitioner have been prejudiced due to the findings, inferences, conclusions, or decisions below. And specific reasons that would allow this court and that are relevant here to reverse, and we believe our justification for this course to just do an outright reversal and rule that Lindsay is eligible, are number one, violation of constitutional provisions below, by the ULJ, unlawful procedure employed by the ULJ, findings by the ULJ that are unsupported by substantial evidence in light of the entire hearing record. And there are substantial evidence supporting an outright reversal, as well as arbitrary and capricious findings that were made by the ULJ. So moving on, the reasons that Mr. Lindsay quit were several. Number one, the employer, Monticello RV Center, violated wage and hour laws, specifically section 181.101 of the Minnesota statutes, which allows for commissioned salespeople. It requires that they be paid earned commissions no later than 3 months after those commissions are earned. It also requires that commissions be paid on a regular payday established by the employer. Both of these provisions were violated by the employer in this case. A single violation is good reason for an employee to quit, a good reason caused by the employer. The record here reveals unequivocally And there's nothing to contradict it, that there's at least one violation, and that's the shorting of $699 for over a year. $699 were shorted from 2018 and were not paid until over a year later after Mr. Lindsay quit. And so that is a very clear violation of Minnesota statute section 181.101. The ULJ reasoned that because Lindsay didn't know that he had been shorted this money, that it could not have been a good reason to quit. And I submit to the court that there's just no logic in that finding.
Counsel, it's Judge Larkin. Quick question. Can you tell me who the ULJ is in this case?
I believe it was ULJ Scott Mismash.
Thank you.
Moving on, or continuing, the ULJ found that because ultimately Lindsay didn't know for certain that he was shorted by that amount in 2018, that it could not have figured into his reasons to quit. And we submit that there's not a lot of logic in that. The fact is, Mr. Lindsay was suspicious throughout 2018 and throughout 2019 that he had been shorted. The reason he couldn't know for sure were also the reasons that played into him quitting. And that's the fact that the system that the employer used to track commissions was never kept up to date.
Mr. Huberty, I tend to agree with you that the record is not as it should be, and there weren't credibility findings, but I'm not sure you've convinced me that we have the authority to just outright reverse the determination, absent sending it back in order to have an opportunity for a full and complete hearing. What authority do we have to make that could be viewed as a harsh result, that we just say, well, too bad, Deed, you know, you messed up. So what authority do we have?
Well, ultimately, obviously, that's the court's prerogative to determine that. But we believe that under Section 268.105, Subdivision 7D, that it allows the court to just outright reverse the decision below. It states that right there in the statute. And it can do that if there are findings that are unsupported by substantial evidence and are arbitrary or capricious. And here the record is very clear. There's no question at all. The employer outright admits that Mr. Lindsay was short of that money for 2018. And under the Hawthorne case, that's substantial reason to quit. A single violation of wage. Now, yes, Judge.
Counsel, I want to follow up on that question that Judge Warkey had. It's a good one. And in all my years on this court, I've struggled to understand what informs this court's decision whether to outright reverse as opposed to reversing and remanding for further proceedings. And I don't know that I've ever been provided a good answer. And I know I've been on panels where the panels just said, we're reversing, we're not remanding for a do-over. I don't know, have you researched that? And I guess my question is, you know, we can reverse if the substantial rights of the petitioner may have been prejudiced. Does that indicate that, you know, we could look at a case and say, all right, the ULJ made several errors of law, did not conduct the hearing appropriately, did not make credibility findings, did not recognize that he had to consider all the reasons offered for quitting, did not recognize case law, which would indicate untimely payments are a basis for quitting. I mean, it's a lot of problems. Does that not substantially prejudice an employee who then has to hire a lawyer, do an appeal, go back and do it over? I mean, why should we make, you know, pro se parties end up having to hire a lawyer and then come back and do it again when the ULJ, who's the expert in the room and who's obligated to know the law, this is all that person has to know for this job is unemployment law, and is obligated to develop a record when, you know, an employee or an employer kind of raises an issue, although it may not be with citations to authority, I mean, is that not an appropriate case just to simply reverse? Or do we have to say, well, we can't reverse unless we ourselves can reach the conclusion that there was or wasn't good cause to quit? So that's a long way of asking whether there's case law where we've just reversed because the ULJ screwed it up and we don't feel that it's appropriate to go through this, you know, a third time, especially when the initial determination was he's eligible.
I absolutely agree with that sentiment, Your Honor. It is at great expense that my client is fighting this case. Unfortunately, I'm a little bit derelict in having not done any specific case law research into the, I guess, the width and breadth of Section 268.105, Subdivision 7D. Twofold are the reasons for that. I didn't know that it would be that big of an issue, number one. And number two, in reading the statute, I think it's fairly clear that the court does have the authority to reverse in certain situations, as Your Honor mentioned, violation of my client's substantial rights. It also just doesn't make much sense to me that if from the existing record, it's very clear that there is evidence, uncontroverted evidence that would justify under present law or would render the reasons for quitting substantial and caused by the employer and legitimate reasons, one instance to quit and still be eligible for the benefits. If that's present in the record is already developed, then it really doesn't make any sense to remand for further proceedings. And that is
something. Mr. Huberty, if we do that, we're then, as an appellate court, making findings of fact, and we're weighing the evidence. And to me, it's more of a, to simply reverse would be more of a consequence. I don't want to call it a punishment, but a consequence of deed not fulfilling its obligation. So that's where I struggle with this. And I agree with Judge Larkin. There's just, I don't know of any authority that determines it one way or the other. I mean, we would have to necessarily then say that, I forgot what it was, $800 some was not paid in a specific calendar year, and credibility findings were not made on what was true or what wasn't true. So that, I'm just looking for some authority or some direction.
I'm sorry, Your Honor, as I stated, I didn't do a lot of research into that. I don't know if it's within proper procedure. I could certainly submit.
Judge Larkin, if you'll just bear with me 1 minute, because I see you have a question too. Why is it in our process of how we handle deed matters, these cert matters? When deed in this case, and this is probably a better question for you, Ms. Phelps, but when deed in this case concedes that the record is incomplete and also says we should do it over, why can't you take it out of the Court of Appeals realm and just simply act on that or do that or make a decision? Do you know anything on that? And when deed has an opportunity to respond, I'd like to know the answer to that also.
I don't know the answer to that, but to be honest, when I received the letter brief or the brief and the letter in lieu of brief from the deed, I was under the impression that this court would just make a quick order, sending it back to the ULJ so that we weren't here today arguing this.
I thought you would send a reply brief saying what you've argued today, which is a remand is not enough. You should just reverse outright, and here's the reasons why.
Right.
And let's not forget, Judge Larkin has a question too.
Oh. I can wait. He can answer that.
My intent was to do that, but then I thought, well, I mean, there's really nothing to rebut here. And then I got the order from the court setting the oral arguments, and thought, well, I guess they're not looking for a brief from me. So That's my fault. Judge Larkin.
Yeah, I guess my question following up on Judge Werke's questions is, what I'm asking, and I think this is probably a question for Deed, is, you know, there are two ways to reverse, it seems. One would be to say, we're reversing on the merits because the findings that have been made show, as a matter of law, good reason to quit. I wonder if there's another basis to reverse, which is simply, we're reversing without making any findings, without determining, in fact, that there was good reason to quit, but rather we're reversing because the ULJ made several errors in the way this hearing was conducted. First and foremost, failing to recognize that multiple reasons were given, failing to apply the law that does apply, given the reasons that were given, failing to develop the record, and failing to make adequate findings, including credibility determinations. Therefore, we're reversing based on errors of law, which seem to have been prejudicial, because there's enough findings there that would allow us to think there's something to this, and this guy shouldn't be paying for an appeal and to go back and do this a second time. So just reversing because the procedure was wrong and it substantially affected someone's rights. And maybe Deed can tell me whether they've ever seen this court do that or something
Mr.
like that.
Huberty, your time has run out, but please go ahead and answer the question.
I agree with both of those points. The ULJ, it should be noted, also found that Mike Coons, the sales manager, regularly failed to maintain the right book. And that's the source in this case. And so if you regularly fail to maintain that, it necessarily follows that there weren't payments on the established commission payday. That plus the commission payments weren't made. And so I think both reasons, the affecting the substantial rights and that there's factual reasons that would justify the quit. So that's all I have.
Thank you. We'll turn it now over to you, Ms. Phillips, and you have a lot of questions that are waiting for you.
Yes. All right. Thank you. Good morning. May it please the court, counsel. My name is Carrie Phillips, and I represent the respondent, Department of Employment and Economic Development, or DEED for short. So as DEED stated in its letter brief, DEED agrees that the ULJ erred here by not making necessary findings of fact regarding the reasons relator quit his employment. I mean, we're asking the court to remand to allow the ULJ to make those necessary findings. I'll go to the issue of reversal since the court has questions about that. I believe that the court has outright reversed in a case like this. I don't have a citation for you. It's our argument today that the court can't make these additional findings of fact that are necessary to support a conclusion of law that the relator meets an exception to ineligibility for quitting, and that the court has to apply the statute, and that there needs to be findings or undisputed evidence that would support that conclusion. And here, the only way the court could outright reverse. I'm sorry, did you have a question, Judge Larkin?
When you're finished, I'd like to jump in.
Oh, okay. The only way the court could determine here that the relator did have a good reason is if it determines that failure to pay that $699 from 2018 was a good reason caused by the employer. And we argue that that's not enough here to outright make that conclusion. First, the evidence shows that wasn't a reason for quitting because he didn't know about it.
Just so we're clear, there were allegations of other non-payment concerns that were raised. Should it matter to us that we're not sure about the others, but we know about this one? Why isn't that enough? I mean, an employee says, I've bargained to work for pay. I wasn't paid. It's only $700. Well, $700 is $700. Mm-hmm. And if an employee bargained to work for a certain amount of time and cheated the employer out of time, we would say the employee is, you know, we've said, you know, that's theft. It's theft of time. And we've justified that as a basis for finding misconduct. Why wouldn't it alternatively be a basis to say that's a good reason to quit? If the employer has reason to sever ties for misconduct, for failure to provide time that was paid, why wouldn't it be the other way around? Why wouldn't the employee get the benefit when it's the employer who's messing up?
Sure. So I think with that 699, just looking at it without all that other evidence, I understand there's other evidence that there was other problems with payment moving forward. And I think that's what we want to make findings on. But just looking at that 699, it doesn't rise to the level of good reason caused by the employer because it was just one incident. I understand there's evidence of more, and it was inadvertent. The employer found it doing an audit and paid him right away. There's no evidence that it was intentionally withholding it. It appears to be an accident. Of course, if the judge finds that that's a pattern, that it was habitual.
Why would it matter whether it's intentional or not? If I'm expected pay and I wasn't paid, say, well, my employer is negligent or my employer is not being careful. You know, I expect my employer to keep track of these things. I don't have the access to the technology to keep track of it. You know what? I can't keep working for an employer who may occasionally completely miss payment that's due to me. Why isn't that a good reason to quit, regardless of whether it's intentional?
I think if an error is made and the employer recognizes it and fixes it right away, it's not a good reason caused by the employer for quitting because mistakes happen and mistakes in payment happen. If this is something that's repeated, if the employer is on notice that this is a problem and it continues to happen, then I think it does raise to that, it does become something that would cause an average reasonable employee to quit because it is a negligence.
Judge Larkin does have a question.
Yeah. Why does Deed get a second bite at the apple here? I mean, Deed's the expert. Deed's the one that has, first of all, you know, Deed made the determination originally. He quit for good reason. He's entitled to benefits. So we start, that's our finding. So it seems to me if like that's finding is challenged and then there's a reversal, we go back to Deed's initial determination. We don't have to make any findings. That's the determination Deed made to start this. And then, you know, these are supposed to be informal hearings on the telephone. People aren't represented by lawyers. Therefore, the unemployment law judge has this sort of unique obligation to know the law, apply the law, issue spot based on arguments that are made, develop the record, make credibility determinations. I mean, that's the obligation of Deed. And if Deed falls down completely on its obligation after Deed has said you're eligible for benefits and has given him benefits, why does Deed get another shot?
Sure. And I understand that it is unfortunate that we're here, that it's gotten this far, and that it's lasted this long and that it didn't get developed like that in the first place.
And I would say this, I think context matters. I mean, if you had those circumstances and the record that was developed was one where we would look at it and go, you know, okay, they screwed this up, but we really don't see any way this fellow's going to win or should have won. But here we seem to have a record that indicates, yeah, he probably had good reason for quitting. We just need facts more specific to show that. I mean, isn't that a case where just the outright reversal makes a lot more sense?
Well, I would say that I don't know that they would, that the relator would prevail. I think, you know, the employer does have some conflicting evidence on a lot of those points. The employer says, I can give you payroll records. We paid him on time. You know, and of course, I wish the judge would have requested those payroll records at that time. And that's what he should have done.
Well, but here's the other thing. Where's the employer's not here? Here we are on the appeal. You know, we had a finding from Deed. He's eligible for benefits. The employer contested it, had this hearing. Now here we are on our appeal, and where is the employer? Now, granted, the employer doesn't have to participate in the appeal, but to me, the absence kind of speaks loudly. We're not hearing any justification from the employer.
Yeah, and often employers don't participate in the appeals, and I'm not sure why that is. They have chosen not to.
Right, now I have a question for you that goes back to what I posed to Relator. What Can you suggest from your perspective, and I'm not saying that you have the authority to craft something, but how can we stop this train from going down the track when you initially first agreed, you know, the record was sloppy, it wasn't put together. We go through all of this cost for everyone involved, and now regardless of the outcome, you got to wait for a decision to be made, and we have somebody that is not receiving money, and it's kind of a trying time. I mean, is there anything that you can suggest? I mean, it's not really a part of your oral argument, but what could have happened if there's anything that comes to mind?
I don't know how we would speed the process up. It's our understanding that once it's appealed to the Court of Appeals, we lose jurisdiction to address it or correct it, that it has to go to the panel and we can't take it back. So once we once we looked at this record and determined that there are problems here that we need to fix, you know, it was our understanding that
could you have petitioned the special term panel to dismiss the appeal because of a concession you've made? I'm just kind of thinking out loud.
I didn't think of that. Maybe that would have been a good idea. Relators Council mentioned, we thought maybe it would just be ordered, back for a remand, because in the past we haven't, gone through the oral argument process. So we weren't sure about that. But, that's a good question. I mean, maybe
your opponent is asking for an outright reversal. So dismissing the appeal gets us back into procedure that the relator wants to avoid. I'm going back to Judge Larkin's sort of premise here that it's not entirely unreasonable to me. If you've got an initial determination by deed, and then you have an appeal essentially to the ULJ, and there's in the end, the ULJ makes a decision that is not supportable. I'm not certain why it is not the best approach simply to say, we're finished, we're reversing. It's one thing if we said, the argument that I didn't get the process that was due, and I know that's part of the argument. Well, if that's the argument, then we return it for the process that's due. But there's an additional argument, which is that the substance is not sufficient, that regardless of the process, the result would be arbitrary and capricious under the facts that were presented by the employer on this record. Help me to understand why it is that an outright reversal, even if we can't cite any particular law, why an outright reversal wouldn't be the appropriate remedy.
Sure. And one thing I can say in response to that is, we also shouldn't punish the employer for deeds mistakes. I think the best course, because that the initial determination is based on a limited amount of evidence, basically questionnaires. And then at the hearing, the ULJ's job is to develop the record and get all of that evidence and then apply the law according to what the evidence is. Here, he made some errors, but to go back to that initial determination, I think in a way punishes the employer because they, it's not all being taken into consideration in the law applied to the evidence.
How does it punish the employer? I mean, what we're consistently told that these are public funds, they're not the employer's funds, how is the employer harmed? Well, is it about credits?
Right. Well, their tax rate is impacted, would be impacted if it was a good reason caused by the employer. One thing that I need to look at, though, is however, during the pandemic, sometimes employers' tax rates, we're not impacted, but in general, and I maybe need to look at that quickly, but in general, when someone quits for a good reason caused by the employer, it impacts the employer's tax rate. So that's why they're a party to the issue, because it does impact them. So here, an outright reversal, it would have that element of unfairness for the employer because not the best evidence isn't being used to determine whether that exception applies.
I think it almost seems like this is a situation where there should be costs against deed. I mean, I'm really bothered by the fact that it appears that the ULJ just dropped the ball here on several levels. And I don't understand why the employer or the employee should have to suffer. I mean, in response to Judge Werke's question, I mean, maybe what needs to happen is we need better decision-making from deed at these hearings.
And to what I can say to that is, you know, this was issued at a time when the ULJ's workloads were higher than usual. And so judges were having a lot of hearings a day. And so they're still bound by those obligations to develop the record, but you know that may be a reason why it didn't happen here.
That's understandable. I'm not very sympathetic to that answer because the government has resources that private, and we assume that. I mean, it's wrong to assume that private parties like the employer and the employee have unlimited resources when the government, in fact, in the middle of the pandemic, had substantially more resources than either. And I don't see that as a basis for a pass.
Understood.
Anything else, Ms. Phillips?
Ms. Phillips, that you are aware of cases where we've simply just reversed outright. I've been on those panels and I've always raised the issue. Well, how do we know if we should reverse or we should remand? And judges with much more seniority than I had said, we can do this. So you've seen it.
I know it's happened. I don't have a case in hand, but just talking to other attorneys at deed, they've said, yeah, I think the court has done that. But the question you pose is a good one. It's my understanding that there needs to be findings that support the conclusions of law and the statute. And so that's why we're asking for a remand to develop the record and fix those errors and make the best decision based on, you know, all of the evidence that's available and appropriate credibility determinations.
Judge Larkin has another question. Your time is going to be expiring, but please answer it.
Yeah.
Your last case of the day, and for that reason, we're using this more as a discussion or conversation than a question and answer argument format.
You seem to be anticipating, I think both sides are, if we were to remand this, it would be for a new hearing where we get a better record developed and we have answers to our questions. What if we were just to remand and say, make a decision on this record? Would this record support the ULJ's conclusions? Would it be adequate?
I don't think it's adequate. I think the ULJ needs to develop the record on what the employment agreement was, what the compensation structure was, when he was paid his commissions, and when he earned his commissions. So I think there needs to be that information in the record to determine whether, you know,
he had good class.
What happened.
And is another one, I wonder if another problem isn't that, you know, you've both sides have cited case law saying you can present several reasons for quitting. Not every one of them has to carry the day, only one, but all of them have to be considered. And it looks to me like even on reconsideration, when the employee said, look, the finding you made about why I quit was inadequate, because what I'm really saying is I had a fight to get paid. I wasn't getting paid on time. I wasn't getting paid. I was having to beg for my pay. And yet the ULJ said, well, although he made several arguments about why he quit, you know, the predominant one was he didn't have access to the information. So, I mean, it's sort of like even on reconsideration, this pro se employee cues the unemployment law judge into the fact that he's raising several reasons for quitting. And the biggest one in his mind is untimely payment. And the ULJ just sort of dismisses that as, well, he's got several reasons, but what he talked about most was access to the tracking data. And it seems pretty unfair to the employee and it harms the employer as well. It's just who should take the hit.
Yes, that was an error by the ULJ, certainly.
All right, I've got to ask one short question. I just procedure wise, if we would reverse and remand, is it the policy of D that goes back to the previously assigned ALJ? I don't know that firsthand.
It usually does. And so the record, everything in the record would remain in the record, and then he would hold another hearing and add to the record and make those necessary findings and credibility determinations.
Thank you. Judge Larkin, is your hand just up or no? Did you have another question? Where'd she go? Oh, there you are. You moved. All right, we're gonna go back to you, to the relator's attorney, if you wish to argue further.
Yes, Judge, just a few quick points. In regard to the employment agreement, in the record, it shows that the employer testified that the payday was the 10th of each month for the commissions. That was confirmed by the relator in his testimony. The ULJ found that because Mr. Lindsay had been quote unquote made whole by the end, that it could not have been a good reason to quit. That's an error of law. And that would be grounds for outright reversal under the statute, the governing statute. Because he was made whole at the end, that doesn't mean that Section 181.101 was complied with. You can't short somebody their pay for months on end, and then as they're quitting, pay them everything they're owed and call it good. Sorry, you don't get unemployment benefits. And that's essentially the determination that the ULJ made. That's an error of law and is grounds for outright reversal under the statute. Lindsay related.
And that was specifically with regard to the $700, correct?
That was specifically with regard to the pay from 2019, I believe.
The $699, I mean the...
Right, and it was, as far as the $699, he said, yeah, sure, he was shorted $699 from the year prior, but Lindsay didn't know about that, so it couldn't have been a good reason to quit. That doesn't make a lot of sense to me, as I've already stated. Lindsay raised these issues with the employer repeatedly, but to no avail. And yes, this whole process, I can tell you, has been quite costly to Mr. Lindsay. Right now, he's on the hook for $25,000 in change, I believe is the figure. So he does have a lot riding on this. And, he's already obviously paid a substantial sum just to get his case this far. And so sending it back down to the ULJ would be financially prejudicial to him, no doubt. And finally, again, in Minnesota Statute 68.105, Subdivision 7D, says this court may reverse if the substantial rights of the petitioner have been prejudiced because the findings, inferences, conclusions, or decisions are, again, made upon unlawful procedure, which they were, in violation of his due process rights, a constitutional provision that occurred as well. They have been affected by other error of law, which I've just stated. They're unsupported by substantial evidence in view of the hearing record. And so those are four reasons under the statute that are laid out very clearly that gives this court the authority to just do an outright reversal. And that is what we're asking for. Obviously, we would consider even a remand would be considered at least a partial victory, because we believe that when all the evidence that is relevant is submitted, that the correct decision will be made and Lindsay will prevail in this. But we don't believe that that's necessary, as we've made clear here today. That's all I have.
Thank you to both counsel. Speaking for the panel, I appreciate your candor in connection with answering our questions and our discussion today. It's very helpful to us when we at least have a clear picture of where we're going. The matters are submitted, which means a decision will be issued in the statutory timeframe. That does conclude our oral argument calendar today. This court will stand in adjournment.